So, you know, I've been one of the top docs in San Diego, 13 years in private practice, and I became a world expert. Now you got it, Chuck. At gaining weight. So my whole life I've been overweight since I was a kid. I'm the guy on the left side there. And these are some friends, and we've been hiking Cowles Mountain. We're active people. And all of us were kind of in the same situation. We're doing all this exercise trying to lose weight. The most discouraging thing is, if you look at the data on exercise, you see we're exercising more and more than we ever have, and here's our obesity and diabetes code. Hasn't made a difference. When you look at the exercise, you go, I'm just going to work out and take off all this weight. It doesn't work. I want it to work, and there's other benefits as far as cardiovascular health, not falling when you get old, dementia, heart disease, all this kind of stuff. But for weight loss, it's abysmal. And this shows I'm a true expert. That's me in Guatemala about a year ago with my wife. And you can click one more time, Chuck. So that's not good. It's not good. Because we know in medicine, it's not how much you weigh. It's that abdominal fat that's going to kill us. And I guarantee you, when you start looking at the data, it's shocking. The most dangerous body type to have is skinny arms and skinny legs. And that hard belly, they go, look, there's no fat here. And you punch the outside and it's hard. And you go, that's hard as a rock. You're fine. They're in the most danger of a heart attack of anyone because that fat's around the visceral organs, that we call it visceral fat. And that's surrounding the liver, pancreas, and all that. So that's what gives us problems with diabetes and all this kind of stuff. Not the fat out here that we can pinch. And I'll talk a little bit more about that later. So that's not good. So how did I get here? Struggled with weight since childhood. Played football, and I wrestled. I had to get up to 205 for football and wrestle at 165. So I would just kill myself, spit, run, do all that crazy stuff. And so after high school, I figured, well, I'm gaining weight because I just totally killed my metabolism because I was not eating and running and torturing yourself, trying to lose 40 pounds. And I always did it, but I was always dehydrated. And it wasn't real weight loss a lot of the time because you're dehydrated and beat up and tired out. And you lose muscle mass also doing that. So a friend of mine after a run said, hey, let's go back to my house and I'll make some orange juice. And he looked at me and said, dude, are you kidding me? You're going to drink orange juice after running? No wonder you're struggling with your weight. And this is just a few years ago. And so he says, fructose is the worst thing you can eat. Yeah, but it's fruit sugar. It's natural sugar. He goes, tell it to your liver. It doesn't know. Sugar is sugar. It doesn't matter whether it comes from fruit or whether it comes from white sugar. As a matter of fact, high fructose corn syrup is the most dangerous thing we can consume when you look at the data. Because that cannot be used by the body. It has to go to the liver, store as fat. Then it gets reconverted over to glucose later when your body needs energy. But at that time, and I would recommend watching, it's called Sugar, the Bitter Truth. It's on YouTube, it's free. And then I started looking at these books. There's a guy named Gary Taubes, Good Calories, Bad Calories, because we're told a calorie is a calorie, doesn't matter. Exercise more, eat less, you're a glutton. And when you look at the data, it does not show that. So it's frustrating for us. And so I get into it with nutritionists and endocrinologists, and hopefully I can sell you guys on my case of what I'm saying. And I tried low carb, I was doing paleo, I was having fruit shakes. At the beginning of 2017, I was the heaviest I ever was. I was 250 pounds in those pictures. And I was doing the right stuff. Every 3 hours I was eating, I was having a smoothie for breakfast I didn't even like, but we throw a bunch of vegetables in there, it doesn't taste good, so you pour in orange juice and apple juice and all this other stuff, which is a ton of sugar. So when you start realizing, oh, so I was hungry all the time and I had to eat all the time because I was getting those sugar spikes, and I'm gonna talk more about that. So I read a book by Rob Wolf who mentioned this guy, Jason Fung. I said, who the heck is this Jason Fung guy he's mentioning? So this guy is one of the sharpest minds in medicine. I would recommend he has two books out. One's called The Obesity Code, and there's another one called The Diabetes Code. Anyone with diabetes or a family member with diabetes, this guy is a revolutionary, and he's changing how we're managing diabetes, and I'll tell you more about that. So I watched his video. I mean, he has tons of video on YouTube, worthwhile watching. And I thought, this guy's got to be a nut. Who's going to, first of all, want to skip food when food tastes so good? And if you don't eat, you're going to shut your metabolism down. But then I watched him speak, and I started understanding. And I said, well, let me give it a month, and I'm going to see. Well, that first month, I lost about 25 pounds, and I never went back to Slurpees. You know, they said that's low fat, so you could have all these things that are, you know, like Entenmann's cakes we're all eating, and we're getting fatter, and we're getting more diabetes, even though it's low fat. So what I'm getting at is this low fat that we've only done for the last 30 years or so has really caused a lot of devastation in our healthcare system. And as a doc, this is what I see day in and day out, and I see people getting worse and worse on our treatment plan. So they're following the plan, and we think they're not following the plan, and we'll talk some more about that. So this is kind of what I was just talking about. having protein drinks, low-carb stuff, kickboxing, working out 5 or 6 times a week. So I wasn't sitting around doing nothing. So I was majorly frustrated, and a lot of us had been in that situation. And then his video changed my view of stuff. So what then? This is it, 20 pounds. So I'm down about 45 pounds now. And I reached out to Chuck Hicks. After I lost weight, I said, you know, I think I can help Chuck, and Chuck's going to give his story, so I'm not going to tell too much of that. And so he's had a lot of success doing that. I reached out to Jeff Cotterman, who's giving a talk right now on the same thing I'm talking about. He is a personal trainer, and he believed you had to carb load like crazy to get athletic performance. The data doesn't show that. So I spent hours with this guy talking to him, and now he's totally converted over. He's 180 degrees change after all of his nutritional background. So you start understanding, oh, there is validity to this. So here's what we've been told. We have to eat every two or three hours. You got to keep the engine. Guess how many studies have been done on that? Zero. Not one study shows that if you eat every 3 hours, you're going to lose weight. I've never met anyone in my life yet that said, hey, you know, doc, I used to weigh 400 pounds, started eating every 2 hours, now I lost all this weight. It just doesn't happen that way. And when you understand the physiology, you'll understand. So if you skip breakfast, you think you're going to shut your metabolism down, everything, you're going to go into a starvation mode. Fasting's not natural. Fasting is a fad diet. And ketones are bad, and ketoacidosis. Anyone with diabetes knows ketoacidosis is really dangerous. But these are totally different things, totally different entities altogether. So what is insulin? Is it a bad thing? No, because if we don't have insulin, we die. All type 1 diabetics back in the 1800s died because they couldn't absorb any of the sugar from their bloodstream. What insulin does, it's a hormone, and when you eat sugar, so this morning if we had donuts and bagels, we shot our sugars up. Your body can only have 1 teaspoon of sugar at one time in the bloodstream because it's toxic. So your body says, let's grab that sugar and put it somewhere. So if you worked out this morning, it grabs that sugar and it stores it as glycogen stores in your muscles so that when a lion chases you or something happens, it's a survival. You know, you need to have muscle energy where you can use it. But once you have an excess of energy, it says, okay, now where do I put it? Okay, let's stick in the love handles. No problem. We have fat tissue. That's why those guys I told you about are really in a dangerous situation because they don't have enough fat tissue outside where we could all see it, they have it around the organs, and that's a bad place to put it. So if you look at someone who's super obese, a lot of times they're at a lower cardiovascular risk than someone who's thin that has diabetes. Because when you run out of places to put sugar, it overflows back. You have to think of it, Jason Fung talks about this a lot, it's like a bowl, and once it fills at the top, you could move that sugar all around, but you can't keep pouring sugar in there. At some point, you gotta stop, because all your tissues and cells are full with it. So we put people on insulin and we feel good because we say, oh, look, their sugars are better. All that sugar is not leaving the body. It's being shoved into the cells, which causes infections and amputations and kidney failure and blindness and all the stuff that we see with diabetes. So without insulin, we die. But with too much of it, what happens? And this is the point of what I'm talking about. When we start gaining weight, we have insulin resistance. So as a doc for 13 years, one of the top docs, I don't get this concept. My type 2 diabetics, when they come in, if you check their insulin level, it's super high. This is type 2 diabetics. Type 1, you can't make insulin. So type 2, they have high insulin levels. So, well, their sugar's 400 and they have all this insulin. How come their sugar, if insulin grabs the sugar and gets rid of it, how come their insulin could be high? But the problem is insulin resistance. And the best way to explain it is this. If you guys came in to me and said, hey, doc, look, I'm drinking 10 beers at night. I know this is a Christian church, and we can't really talk about this, but I'm drinking 10 drinks at night and I can't get drunk, what should I do? What we're doing in Western medicine is say, well, then have 12, 14, 16, 20 until you get the effect you want. Seb's saying, guys, 10 beers is going to start giving you ulcers and all these other problems. We got to cut back on the alcohol. So you cut back on the alcohol for 2 or 3 weeks. Then you go out for a drink with your friends, and you feel it. You don't have to have 20 drinks. Now you only need one. And that's the point is these guys have insulin, but it's not effective anymore. It's like if we nag our wives all the time, she tunes us out. If someone cusses all the time, you don't listen to them anymore. But if they're quiet and calm and they cuss like crazy, then all of a sudden you say, oh, you know, he's upset. He's got my attention. So what happens is we get this insulin resistance. So what causes this? We store fat around our liver, and the liver, believe it or not, makes a ton of sugar from fat we've stored there. So God was smart enough to give us a backup battery. That's why we have fat. And I'm going to talk about that a little bit later also. But this insulin resistance leads to all kinds of stuff. And in Western medicine, the problem has become, we say, well, we don't control the sugars as tightly as we should because we found that the lower we made type 2 diabetic sugar, the worse out they had more heart attacks, strokes, their mortality was the worse. And you think, how can this be by lowering their sugar? Because we were using insulin to lower it. So So the more and more insulin you give people, the lower their sugar, the more cardiovascular disease. The early studies showed when they were trying to study what insulin did, they were putting a catheter in the dog's groin, and then they were injecting sugar and doing stuff and doing experiments. The problem they had is they kept getting atherosclerosis in those where they put the insulin. So they had to keep moving it around because of that problem. So it just, and anyone who has type 2 diabetes who injects insulin, they have to move it around or you'll get a fat deposit right there. And as a doctor, anyone I put on insulin, I guarantee anyone here who's on insulin, you'll gain 20 pounds when you start insulin because insulin makes you store fat. And then you get more insulin resistant, then we get upset with you and say, hey, you gained 20 pounds, now you need more insulin. No, it's because we made them more insulin resistant and that's the problem. So if we catch it at the beginning, we can prevent all these bad outcomes. So these are the things we look at. Again, you know, the high, and all these things have been associated with all these diseases we're treating, and it's crazy. There's actually a movie called The Magic Pill that's worth watching. It's on Netflix for free. You could watch it, and they go through a lot of this stuff, and it's well done. So high insulin levels increase your risk of cancer, dementia, Parkinson's, all-cause mortality, coronary artery disease, and I'm going to talk a little bit more about that, and peripheral vascular disease. So, Chuck, you can go to the next slide. So this is metabolic syndrome. A lot of us have that. And what we're seeing here is increased blood pressure, high blood sugars, excess body fat around the waist, the middle part, and abnormal cholesterol. Really, it's triglycerides we're talking about. And all those things increase your risk of cardiovascular disease by 300 to 500% if you have three out of these five things. And a lot of us have it. So here's why I can't fast, fatigue. And so what is keto and low carb? What does this have to do with fasting? From a church perspective, the most dangerous thing we could do as a church is fasting and praying. You know, when people can, but in America, we're not in a position where we can do that because if we have to eat every 3 hours, how are you going to fast? Because you lose it because, and I'm going to talk a little bit more about that, you need an energy source. So when your insulin is super high, you can't tap into those fat stores, and we'll talk about that a bit. But, and you know, that we think if you're an athlete, you need to carb load. I see guys at the gym, they're drinking Gatorade running. Guess what? You're stepping on the gas and the brake at the same time. You're just replenishing all that sugar you're trying to burn off in your glycogen stores. And so you're never going to have a benefit from that, no matter how much you're running. And we think that carbs run the brain. So why doesn't the body prevent us from getting fat? What the body is doing is exactly what it's designed to do. God says, look, sugar's bad, you got to get out of your bloodstream. Now, alcohol, well, and people always ask this question, if you're drinking a lot, your body's going to metabolize every drop of alcohol before it moves over to sugar burning. And once it burns every drop of sugar, then it burns over to fat. So if your body is preoccupied trying to burn sugar, it's going to store the fat away as fat, and that's why we're getting fatter. And so our bodies are doing exactly what it is. It knows it's a toxin. It cannot stay in the bloodstream, so it has to store it somewhere. So fat stores, if we are lucky enough to have fat, believe it or not, even though it's not as attractive, it's healthier for us to have it stored there than around our organs. So scope of the problem, we all kind of know that 70% of us are overweight, 40% are obese, 40% of all cancers recently have been associated with obesity, and I would argue that's insulin resistance that led to the obesity. So 65 to 80% of all diabetics are dying of cardiovascular disease. And this is a critical point, and this is where in medicine we've taken a divergence where we're looking at the wrong thing, possibly. The data is showing that, but if you have a diagnosis of diabetes, you have 60 to 80% chance of dying of cardiovascular disease, even with normal LDL cholesterol. And if LDL cholesterol is the whole thing, then why are we putting on diabetics on? Every diabetic is supposed to be on a statin drug. Why? Because statin drugs decrease inflammation around the coronary vessels. And that is a big, huge take-home message. It's not necessarily the absolute LDL level. And I'm going to quickly go through some of those studies at the end. So this is it. A lot of people are going on a high-protein diet, and it's controversial even in the low-carb community because people say, well, protein can cause insulin spikes and it can raise the sugar levels. Now, it's interesting. They just did a huge study with people who are insulin-sensitive and insulin-resistant. And so people who are, when I say insulin-resistant, like a diabetic whose sugars are out of control, if you eat a lot of protein, that makes your sugars go up higher and higher. If you're a lean person and you eat a lot of protein, it doesn't do that same effect. So it depends on the organism that it's in. So if we're in better condition, we could have more protein and get away with it. If you're really out of shape, you got to cut your protein back. And now you're kind of stuck because I'm saying cut back on your carbs, cut back on your protein. What do you eat, right? So the other thing is a lot of people say, no, I'm on a low-fat diet, but you're gaining weight over and over. So guess what? What do we do with the extra sugar? It stores as fat. So you can be on a low-fat diet all you want. If you're eating a ton of calories of sugar, it's stored as fat anyway. So this fat you're trying to avoid is being converted over anyways. So this is why we don't eat fat. It's going to block your arteries. It's going to do all this stuff. It's going to kill you, this whole thing. I would recommend everyone read this book. It's called The Big Fat Surprise by Nina Teicholz. It's unbelievable. It's super, super unbelievable because when you look at the data, and as a doctor standing before you saying, hey, saturated fat maybe isn't what you thought it was, it's incredible what our food pyramid guidelines were based on and how much corruption was involved in that. Now, I'm not suggesting that you just go out and eat fat all day. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is the big take-home point is if you have to choose between the two, you're going to be way worse off eating carbohydrates for the most part. Now, saying this, one-third of people that are born are insulin sensitive. They're the evil, mean people that can eat whatever they want, cake all day, and they go, what's the problem? I eat whatever I want. I don't gain weight. But you can still be skinny and have insulin resistance and get diabetes. I have 9 guys in my practice that weigh less than 170 pounds. One I just saw yesterday, 157 pounds. That's type 2 diabetes. Why? He was carb loading all day. His pancreas couldn't keep up anymore, and he gets type 2 diabetes. Change his diet. He's been out of the diabetic range for 3 years now, right? So my car, I'm bragging, I have a Volt. No, I'm just kidding. I have I can go 37 miles on electricity, and then I can go like 345 miles on gas, right? So my electricity is, I can burn one or the other. I can't switch over to my gas mode until I burn through all my electricity. It's the same thing. The electricity is like the sugar. You use that for short bursts when you really need it. For long-term stuff, you need to have the gas, which is the fat stores that we have. So these are the alternate fuel source, kind of the same thing. We're always going to choose the sugar first and then the fat. So if we're eating sugar and fat like a donut, your body's going to burn off all that sugar and store the fat away, right? If you're eating a hamburger, there's no sugar there to burn, it's going to burn that fat first. And you're not going to be storing that in your coronary vessels and all that. You're using that as your fuel source. So you're either burning sugar or you're burning fat. So what the big keto thing they're talking about is your body switches over to burning fat as its fuel source. One of the big things that was, it's a shock to me too, there's a study that they could never get away with this now, but in the 70s they did a study, and they converted these people over into ketosis, where they're basically, it's the break, ketones are just the breakdown products of fat. So these are you know, they've been in this ketotic state for 3 months, and they injected these guys with 100 units of insulin. Now, if you did that to anyone in this room, we're passed out, you're going to be dead. I mean, they were dropping their sugars down to 10 or 20. Normal's around 70 to 100. And they're walking around like nothing happened. They're looking at these guys like, how in the heck can they be doing this? Because they're not sugar dependent anymore. You take the sugar away, and they're running on their ketones, and they do just fine. So it tells us there's a lot of hype out there saying you gotta eat every 3 hours. You really don't, because your body can break down some of that fat and turn it back into sugar again and keep this thermostat level so that you're level. And again, none of us would be here. This whole thing about the cavemen would go and they would kill an animal, and then they would track it. They would eat the whole thing because they have no refrigerator. They can't store it away. All the other animals are going to eat it. So we eat it, store it as fat, go hunt and track down another animal for 5 days or so, and then kill it and eat again. So they weren't saying, oh, it's 2 hours, guys, what are we going to eat? Stop by the grocery store. You didn't have that ability. So we've never had this ability. You go back to the farmers, they would eat a huge breakfast. They're not going to waste daylight to stop every 3 hours to eat. Shut down the machines, guys. We're going to hitch up the animals. We're going to go eat. No, they would eat a huge breakfast, work all day, and eat a big dinner, go to bed, wake up the same day, do the same thing. And they were exercising and staying active, burning off a lot of those calories at the same time. So every religion in the world fasts, and they feast. So the point is, we fast before Easter, then you have Ramadan, right now, and so all these guys are fasting, and they do okay. Why? To make them weak, tired, so they can't think for themselves? No, it's to make them more focused and stronger. Anyone here who fasts knows, it's hard now, because if we're sugar dependent and you fast, you feel like garbage. It's terrible and it's hard, but if you're fat adapted, then you're burning your fat stores. You say, I got energy, I'm not cooked. We like to eat, but the point is, it makes it so much easier. So just starting someone say, okay, I'm going to fast on Monday after you've been eating whatever all week, and then you try to fast, forget it. So if someone wants to, for spiritual reasons, fast, the best way to do it is to eat a higher fat diet before your fasting period. Because then your body says, okay, there's no sugar, I could switch over to fat burning. The point is, as we get more and more insulin resistant, we have super high insulin levels. So your body wants to, it has to have a source of energy. When you have a bunch of sugar in there, it just uses that as an energy. When you don't eat for 6 hours, your body says, I have no energy, what do I do? The insulin job is to store that fat. So it blocks you from getting to your fat stores. After you're fasting for a couple days or eating a high-fat diet and low carbs, you lower that insulin level. Now we can get to our fat stores again and use that as an energy source. If anything doesn't make sense, please stop me and ask, and I can clarify. But that's the point of what we're getting at. So how do we use that as an energy source? And it's the same thing. I know for myself, I was in Guatemala on a medical trip, and while we were there, people made tamales and had, so I ate more carbs than I normally do, and I was exhausted, tired, and beat up. I was looking forward to that Monday coming back and fasting. By Tuesday, I felt excellent. My energy was through the roof again. So sometimes it's that fatigue, and I get it, probably the number one complaint we get is fatigue. People come and say, Doc, I'm just tired. Why are you stressed? Are you sleeping enough? And turns out a lot of these guys are high carb intake guys, and they're spiking their insulin. There's a study that just came out that said, the average American is getting hypoglycemic 5 times a day because you're spiking your, you don't get hypoglycemic from cutting your carbs. You get hypoglycemic because you eat the sugar and your insulin overshoots that sugar, knocks your sugar levels down. Now you're hungry again. Now you eat again, you put your high carb. And so if you have bacon and avocados and eggs for breakfast. Oh, by the way, a huge study just came out and they put these guys that were diabetic on 12 to 15 eggs a day. I don't know if anyone could eat that much. But they had no increased risk of cardiovascular disease and actually a decreased risk of cardiovascular disease with better sugar control because they didn't want to eat other stuff. They were stuffed eating all this, right? So there's so much hysteria about cholesterol and if you eat eggs, you're going to die. But I'm telling you, if you eat more cereal, your chances of dying are way higher than that by eating eggs. So, and the same thing. They say a fighter is hungry. That doesn't mean he's tired and weak, can't do anything. He's hungry. He's energized and wants to go and do more. So the other argument that's always going to come up is like you're going to be burning all your muscle stores. If you fast a day, you're going to burn all your muscles. The studies don't show that, and God created us in a better way than that because if you're chopping up trees all summertime for the winter, and the winter comes and it starts getting cold, you have all this firewood sitting there. You can go to the next one, Chuck. And muscle is your furniture. So it starts getting cold. Go ahead to the next one. Which one are you going to burn? Are you going to burn all the firewood that you've been saving up for an energy source, which is the fat stores that we have? Or are you going to burn your muscle instead so that you get weak and tired and you can't do anything? If you're God, how would you design us? It just doesn't make sense. And because fat is so much easier to get to than muscle. It's more accessible. So I think you can just kind of slide through this one. Yeah, there's no survival benefit. God's smart that, Kevin Miller can get away with it, but you think about the grizzly bears, they get fat, they're eating all kinds of fruit and all that kind of stuff. They only eat it for a certain season, they fatten up, and then they go and they hibernate. And then when they wake up, you don't see them say, oh, I can't move because I burned off all my muscle and they're still fat. No, they burn off all their fat, they come out, they're skinny and they're muscular, right? So this is a big thing of why we're at, why what I'm saying is controversial compared to what the standard of care is in medicine. There's a guy named John Yudkin. At the same time, these guys are two competing scientists. And Keyes said fat's killing people. Yudkin says sugar's the problem, and they got into the big battle. Well, it turns out, just like in life, Keyes was a very boisterous, outspoken, politically savvy guy. So he said, fat's the problem, and I'm going to prove it. So you can go through the next one. So this is what happened. Eisenhower, sitting president in 1955, has a massive heart attack. Put him on a low-fat diet. He suffered a stroke in 1957, 2 years later, and he was on a vegan diet. Then in April through August 68, you see he had 4 heart attacks, 7 total, 14 cardiac arrests. I mean, that's pretty tough to make it through all this stuff. 1969, dies from multiple cardiovascular causes. So the minor details on the next slide. You see, he was smoking 4 packs of cigarettes a day, 15 cups of coffee a day, fairly stressful job. So this is the point. Guys, it's lifestyle. It's lifestyle that's the key. And studies have come out that says smoking doubles your insulin level. Stress doubles your insulin level. Sleep deprivation doubles your insulin level. So we're living a high stress, and we're always going to talk about the Mediterranean diet, which is, by the way, 40% fat. They have the lowest cardiovascular risk on the planet. Why? These guys wake up in the morning, and they're fishermen mostly, and they look out and they go, oh, it's kind of windy. You guys want to play cards? Yeah, we'll go fishing tomorrow, whatever, right? The lifestyle's not like, I have an appointment here, I got to be here, I got to pay this, I have my mortgage, you know? It's a different, that being stressed all the time like we are, that's a bad thing. So there's a study that came out in the New England Journal of Medicine that said we can decrease cardiovascular risk 40% with lifestyle, 1% maybe with a statin drug. It just doesn't make sense that we just throw everyone on a statin drug and say, hey, just keep doing what you're doing, you're fine, do that. And so back then, more doctors smoke. This was all over. Doctors were advertising for smoking because we didn't know it was bad. We just thought, if you're going to smoke, smoke Camels. That's the healthiest one for you. So Eisenhower must not have been smoking Camels. He must have been smoking another brand probably to have all those heart attacks. So the government comes in and does a food pyramid, and there's no science behind this. When you start looking at the data, it's horrible data. They just sat in a room and said, guys, what do you think? Well, fat's bad. What do we tell them to eat? Well, you know, Kellogg says, you know, by the way, cereal would be good, wouldn't it? Here's $50,000. Here's $100,000 there. Oh, the bread company? Here, we'll give you a few money. So they were raising funds to decide what we're going to eat. So the problem is, here's the government to the rescue. We can go on to the next slide, Chuck. And so Keyes, who did this stuff, he wrote a book called The Seven Country Study, right? He had 22 countries that he handpicked, and then he dropped all of them. The 15 that he didn't like of the outcomes, he dropped them and said, look, this correlates now. The more France doesn't fit the model, Germany doesn't fit it. There's tons of countries that don't fit the model. So diet is not the only thing. And the problem is you don't isolate. People don't just eat fat. It's just what your diet is. So, you know, they say, well, people eat more fat. Well, guys are, you know, say, I'm going to have my hamburger and my French fries and my Coke and all that. I'm not listening to guidelines. And so when you really look at these are observational studies, which are pretty much useless. It's an association. So people come up with all these associations that does it like whenever a certain person's movie come out, more people drown. They say, well, that must be causative. It's not causative. It just happens to be, you know, at the same time. So this is the key. This is why maybe Keyes was wrong, the guy who said fat was a problem. That where that arrow was shining down in 1980s when we started the food pyramid. And you can see the obesity rate before that and what happened afterwards. And we keep doing the same thing. We've never went back and said, guys, we should look at this. This doesn't seem like it's working very well because we're having more obesity, more diabetes, more cardiovascular deaths. Eating what we're supposed to eat because they said, oh, you can go to the next slide. And so this shows our fat consumption went down, our dairy, all the stuff that they said, the red meat, all that stuff, and carbohydrates went up at the same time where all this stuff's happening. So doesn't it say, well, maybe this is not a good idea, guys. Maybe we're on the wrong path. So you can go to the next one. So what, doctor? Are you actually telling us to eat more fat and less carbs? Yes, as a matter of fact, I am, because the standard care is not working. Diabetes is getting worse, and our diabetes are getting worse. And I'll tell you a couple stories about that. So let me go to the next thing that really convinced me. For me, I had to say, look, weight loss is one thing. I'm down 45 pounds, happy about that. But if I'm going to block my coronary vessels, what good is this, right? So now you can go to the next one. So this was something that came across the work of Dr. Joseph Kraft. This guy did over 50,000, he did over 50 years of autopsies. He was a pathologist. And he wrote a book in 2008 called The Diabetes Epidemic in You. And in it, he says, look, I've done all these autopsies. And he was 86 years old at the time. And he said, those who died of stroke, heart attack, peripheral vascular disease, he said, all these guys, the only thing that unites them with all the labs, HDL, LDL, all the stuff we look at, and he says high insulin level. They either had diabetes, pre-diabetes, or their doctor missed the diagnosis. And as a doctor, I'll tell you, for all those 13 years or 12 years before, I never once checked an insulin level on someone. So what does that mean? And this is critical. This is something to ask your doctor about because they won't understand. They're going to say, one of my partners came in yesterday and said, my crazy patient wants an insulin. Why? I said, oh, it's probably because something she heard me say, right? Because insulin level is critical, and Chuck will tell you about that with his numbers. But So he sent a book out to every medical center in the United States. Not one person called him. 6 years later, I think we can go to the next, or 8 years later, these guys, this guy, Ivor Cummins on the right side, was doing research in Ireland, independently coming up with the same information. And someone dropped the guy's book off and said, some old guy wrote this book, you may want to look at it. And he said the same thing, high insulin levels is what's causing cardiovascular disease. He said, you got to be kidding me. He got on a plane and flew out to meet these guys. So this is Tim Noakes, the next guy. Tim Noakes wrote the book on, it was the lore of running. He says, look, you got a carb load, you got a carb load, you got a carb load. All through his career for 40 years, the guy says, you got a carb load. He gets into his 60s and he starts gaining weight, gets type 2 diabetes. His dad dies of diabetes complications. So he says, man, he gained 18 pounds and you can see he runs like 100 miles a week or whatever. He says, how could I be gaining weight? All I have to do is exercise more and eat less and I'll lose weight. And he's not. His joints are hurting, his back's hurting, he's miserable. So he starts doing research. He said, you know what? I'll try Atkins for a month, and then I'm going to write an expose on how it doesn't work. He loses 18 pounds that month. His sugars come down. Everything gets better. And he's like, holy cow. He was criticizing. He wrote articles about two guys who did Atkins and said, these guys are nuts. And now he's looking and said, I apologize. He flew out and apologized to them personally, right? This guy now wrote The Lore of Nutrition. It's something worth reading to learn about medicine and politics in medicine. He has been through hell. This guy's went through a three-year trial because he got turned in for telling people to eat a higher fat, low carb diet. They said, you're going to kill people. He says, what's your evidence? I'll show you mine. So he went and he had tons of evidence, and these guys had no evidence other than this guy says it's not good for you and this person and this, the guidelines, the food guy. What was that based on? And they had no science. So he ends up getting exonerated. Now they're appealing it again, and it's a nightmare. There's another guy. Oh, you can go to the next slide. Gary Fetke, the guy on the second picture down. This guy's an orthopedic surgeon. He got accused, and this is nuts. I just emailed him yesterday. He's a super nice guy. He's an orthopedic surgeon tired of cutting off diabetics' feet. So he says, guys, look, if we control your sugars, he had a brain tumor, cut his carbs, and his brain, and with treatment, brain tumor resolved. And it happened to be one that's very responsive to a low-carbohydrate diet. And so he got called before the medical board because they said his charge was he was inappropriately reversing diabetes. It's our number one killer. I mean, that's what's causing our cardiovascular disease. They said you're inappropriately because you're telling people to cut their carbs, and it's dangerous what you're doing. He said these guys are doing great. This is just yesterday this came out. I mean, a report came out on Monday. They took type 1 diabetics, which make no insulin, the ones I told you died. And they said, look, let's put these guys on a low-carb diet. And everyone was afraid because if you put these guys on a low-carb diet, they're going to get low sugars and they're going to die and all these things are going to happen. They just did this study with type 1s, notoriously hard to control. Our goal for type 2 diabetics is to keep them less than 7, right? Which is horrible because you're killing off more pancreas cells than you're making in anything above 5. And our goal is at 7, which is terrible for type 2s because we can do way better than that. So these type 1s have been coming in with A1Cs, 3-month sugar averages, at 5.7, which is under 5.7, 5.67, which is in the normal range, better than most of us in this room, right? So, and I want to go back to that a little bit, but so what does it have to do with fasting? Again, if you're fat adapted, it's easier to fast. When I was in Cuba, I met a guy who was a pastor, and he was telling me all this stuff that's different to me about casting out demons and all this stuff, and he said, this one, I just couldn't do it, I couldn't do it. So I had to go home and pray and fast about it. And then we came back, and then the Lord, I thought, come on, man, you're not eating, you're going to be weak. And you know, this is before I started realizing the power of this stuff. So if we want a dangerous church, you pray and fast together. If we go, hey, guys, I typically fast on Mondays, and I may have dinner with my wife, or if I get home late, I'll just eat Monday morning or Tuesday morning. Never died doing that. And my energy is actually up. And the studies show if you fast for one day, your metabolism goes up by 15% the next day. It doesn't go down. And there's tons of information on fasting. Chuck, I don't want to cut into your time too much, but so ketones are what we can use as a fuel source. That can fuel your brain. NASA, the Navy SEALs are now keto. Why? Because if they're out there in the field and they can't eat for 2 days, no problem. They're burning their fat stores. Those guys don't have a lot of fat, but we still have fat stores. There's guys who are running ultra marathons in the fasted state because they're burning their fat stores. They have an energy source for their body. They're taking electrolytes and all that kind of stuff, but the Tour de France, ketogenic, low carb. He didn't carb load. The guy who, Tim Noakes, who went through all that stuff, who reversed himself, he says, look, we're proving that you don't have to carb load. Most of us aren't running a marathon, so we could probably get through a day of work sitting at our desk doing nothing without eating a ton of carbs every 2 hours or 3 hours and chips and that. So that's kind of the point they're making. So cholesterol, I'm just going to quickly run through this, Chuck. I just want you to see the data. These are meta-analyses which go through, like this one's 59,000 people. And the yellow I just highlighted so you can see it. They reduced their saturated fat. It didn't make any difference in strokes, heart attack, and all this kind of stuff. And so you can go to the next one. There's just tons of them here. Again, more saturated fats, we're not more likely to experience heart attack. So, but that's a common knowledge. You got to eat every 3 hours. If you eat fat, you're going to clog off your arteries. But that's not what the data shows. And when you look at it, that's why that book, she went through all the data. And you can see it and say, holy cow, what are we basing these on? You can just, yeah, go to the... No association between saturated fat intake and cardiovascular disease. You know, another one. These are like 135,000 people. This is the Pierce trial that just came out last year, and this was we love this one because again, as an they went through and they said, look, high carbohydrate intake was associated with a higher risk of, and this is what we're seeing, and we're all surprised. They go, how can this be? This is crazy. But they said that the total fat didn't make a difference, but it was the carbohydrate that was the problem. So our food pyramid says to eat all carbohydrates. So what we're arguing is that whole thing is upside down, and we have to switch it around. You're better off cutting out the carbs, having your, you know, as people go, you're eating a hamburger without the bun, and you're crazy. But when you start understanding the science behind it, it makes sense. And you start understanding that Atkins wasn't totally crazy. He wasn't all the way right on everything, but He was right on enough stuff where we all are agreeing, hey, cut your carbs, cut your processed foods, cut your sugar. If you drink one Coke a day, a regular can of Coke, you increase your lifetime risk of diabetes by 25%. I was just in Guatemala, and they thought I was nuts. There's one guy who was he's like their Michael Jordan. There, he was a professional soccer player. He couldn't get his sugars under control. I said, what do you have for breakfast? I just have cereal and milk, and I have but everything he was eating was carbs. I said, cut out your carbs, have eggs, have this. Within a week, you see his numbers go from 170, 170 for breakfast, and then all of a sudden it's 108, 102, 96, 94 on the same exact medicines. So we don't have to keep throwing more and more meds on. And so this one, almost 80% of elderly people studied. Those with higher LDL cholesterol live longer. What? It's exactly the opposite of what we're saying. How can that possibly be? They also did another one. I think it was the last one, Chuck. This is from UCLA. 541 hospitals across the country, almost 140,000 people. 75% of people hospitalized for heart attacks had a cholesterol level at or below the guidelines. So what is that? What does that mean? You're a guideline, you're having a heart 75% of the time, only 25% of the people are over that? Does that mean our guidelines are wrong or we're looking at the wrong marker? Because those same guys, they found that if they had a low HDL, which is the good protective cholesterol, and high triglycerides, which is associated with insulin resistance, they had a significantly higher, but we talk about LDL. Why? Because we can adjust the LDL with a statin drug. The other ones we can't really do except through lifestyle. So when we talk about, do we want to just throw a drug on, say, the problem with diabetes is we say, oh, I'll just eat whatever I want, I'll just take more insulin, get rid of it. But the insulin is what's causing the problem. So the studies show, that's why Jason Fung's book is so good, are we putting too much faith in LDL? And I think we are. Because LDL gets oxidized by sugar, and it gets oxidized by insulin to make it into a bad entity that your body says, I got to get rid of this, and it sticks in the vessels to hide it out of the bloodstream. So this is like starting keto without research, because you have to understand, the point is not that you just put butter on everything and you start eating a bunch of fat. That's not the point. The point is you cannot do that. It's like our faith, too. You can't just say, okay, I'm a Christian, but I'm going to watch pornography tonight. I've been good all day, so tonight I owe myself that, or I owe myself to have, you know, a couple shots of Jack Daniels or whatever it is when you're struggling with alcohol. And that's the thing is you have to understand, look, it is kind of an all-or-none thing. And that's my website. It's called Low Carb Advisor. It's free, and there's a lot of links to all these guys. And if there's some keto foods, there's a lot of stuff. And it's not a restrictive diet. There's so much crazy. You see what these guys eat. And it's unbelievable what people are doing, how they're improving their lives. And I'm telling you, let me just really quickly before Chuck comes up, because Chuck's an example of this too. When I saw Chuck, oh, Chuck, do you have to do slides or something? Do you want to just come up? Yeah, we're good. I think that's it. So Chuck comes in. I look at his numbers, and I think his sugars, his three-month sugar average was, mine was 5.8, by the way, when I started, which is in the pre-diabetic range. His was 5.2. Cholesterol is good. Everything's good. And I'm looking at this big guy thinking, he doesn't have diabetes. His three-month sugar average is totally in the bottom of the normal range. This guy's healthy. But his insulin level was 48. It should be less than 3, right? So it's 48. You're super insulin resistant. Guess what? I showed two endocrinologists his numbers, and they looked at it, and they go, this guy's fine. I said, here's his insulin level. And they said, uh-oh, he's in trouble. He's going to have diabetes. I have a guy on Friday. I got his labs back. I saw him 7 months ago. His A1C, which is the three-month sugar average, was 5.2, totally on the bottom of normal. Yesterday, 6.4. 6.5 is diabetes, 6.4. I talked to him about carbs back then. Now he calls me and says, okay, that's it, man. I'm cutting my carbs. I know we can reverse that now. It's a reversible process, and that's what we have to understand. So thank you for putting up with me. And I'll be around for questions because I know some of this, it's a lot of information. I would love to.
Hey, Jerry, can you unmute me?
What do you want? Do you want this?
Yeah, he's going to unmute me. I could just use a headset.
You want that? Yeah.
Yeah, I'll just grab it. I'm just going to grab the headset, Jerry.
Sorry, guys. Okay. Check, check. You guys hear me okay? All right. So I'm just going to go through real quick my beginnings. I'm still on my journey, obviously. I've lost over 130 pounds so far, and it's been about 8 months now. But I really want to talk about when I first started keto. When Brian had given me that first call, I had heart palpitations, I had edema in my legs, I had some numbness in my feet. It was like on the top of my feet, so I think I was getting some kind of weird peripheral neuropathy thing. I'm not really sure what it is, but it went away, and I just realized it just recently. And I couldn't stand for more than a minute or two before my back started to hurt. I couldn't walk more than 50 feet. Brian's wife is the school principal of the junior high school, and I do IT stuff over there, and she would call me, and I'd have to walk over there to fix a laptop or a printer thing, and usually it's in a classroom when the teachers are working, and I have to stand and do this, and it literally was agony. I was just standing there, and I'm sweating, and it was rough. Just a lot of pain. I couldn't really go too many places. Sometimes I would go with my wife shopping, and she would go shopping, and I would wait in the car because I couldn't be in the store that long before I was getting pain. And if I had to go in the store, I would push the grocery cart so I could have something to hold on to. I couldn't sit in a lot of chairs. I used to break these chairs, these ones you guys are sitting in now. I broke a few of those. A lot of cars, the seat belts didn't fit around me. And that was when I was at 465 pounds. So like I said, I've lost over 130 pounds. And I've been on hundreds of diets, hundreds. And every diet I've been on, lost a little weight, gained it. Something you should know is I served the United States Army when I was young, and I was able to run a mile in 5 minutes and 38 seconds. So I was very athletic. But after that, as I started to get older, I started to gain weight. Lose, gain, lose, gain, lose, gain. Go to the gym, go to the gym, go to the gym, go to the gym. Matter of fact, he had mentioned Kevin Miller. Kevin used to be the manager guy for the Valley Athletic Club. And I was like all pushing to be on like his extreme team. And I'd go there and work out. And so I would have my bouts of success, but I worked out all the way to 465 pounds, doing every diet in the world. Nutrisystem, Jenny Craig, Atkins, vegan, which lasts about 2 minutes. You know, the funny thing is I learned something interesting about the vegan diet, and I'm having a ball with it. They have apparently, you know, vegans are, I eat organic food. I don't touch those poor animals, but the fertilizer that's used to make those nice plants is made out of, guess what? Animals. So they have to kill a lot of animals to have those nice plants they eat. But anyway, so I've done a lot of different diets, and none of them work for me. And I literally was at the end of my rope when Brian had called me one Monday morning in August at about 10:30 a.m. I was literally praying I was done. I was done because I just tried to do a diet, and I was done with diets altogether because I've been on them all. Along the way, I've been accused of being a glutton. I've been accused of having no self-control. I was accused of a lot of things. And the truth was none of that was true, because I used to be able to fast really well with a lot of self-control. A lot of people who are overweight, believe it or not, have a lot more self-control than you might think. The problem is when you're dealing with insulin, leptin, and ghrelin, my three favorite hormones, you find out how great a control those have physiologically on your body and on your brain. When I started doing keto, I was, you know, obviously some people call it a restrictive diet. Most people that call keto a restrictive diet, there's two categories. One, who's never done keto. Two, a person who's done it wrong. And what that means is I love sugar. I love donuts, cakes, cookies, ice cream, anything that has sugar in it. Just give me a needle, you know. So how could a person, and I'm also cursed with a stomach of steel, meaning I don't get problems, acid indigestion. I could probably carve a helicopter up in little metal pieces and eat it. Wouldn't do anything to me. The point being is, so in one sense, I'm not restricted on what I can eat. And I just love food. So when I started keto, I started to learn a few things. And that's the thing about keto. You saw that last slide where there was the kid with the butter knife sticking. You need to get educated and learn it. And Brian's, you got all the resources on your website, right?
Yeah, I have a lot of resources. One that's excellent, I didn't mention to you guys, it's called dietdoctor.com. Excellent. The guy, he's from the Netherlands, and he got fed up like I did, said I'm doing all this stuff, people getting worse. And so he said, I can only reach one person at a time, start a website, it's free. There's a member thing, I think I paid $10 for the member thing, but in all the movies, all this thing, he has tons of research and all that. But he has meal plans, what foods are good, what's not good. Excellent, excellent resource. You can print your own food list. And he does a really good job, and he's helping a ton of people. So, yeah, I would highly recommend dietdoctor.com.
I didn't get a chance to put my slide up because I'm doing other stuff here today, but you can also look at my site, and I also have a link to Brian's on mine. It's quarterTonKetoMan.com. And on the very first page, you can scroll down, and there's some informational videos on keto explaining it a lot better. But I want to just real quick tell you what's happened. And yes, quarterTonKetoMan, all one word, and it's .com. I call it that because I weighed nearly a quarter of a ton when I started. So it's, like I said, I'm still on my journey. I wanted to share my breakthrough with you as a result of doing this and everything I've done in the past. I talked about the hormones. If you guys have ever been to a hometown buffet and you just eat to your stuff and you walk out, the first thing you say when you get out the door is like, I am never eating anything ever again. That's because leptin is there and ghrelin is not there. If you're a person who's starving and you're hungry and you want to eat everything, even some live grubs underneath a piece of driftwood, you are a person who is producing a lot of ghrelin and you are hungry. So one of the things that I learned, and also if you have, what Brian had talked about being hypoglycemic multiple times a day, that was me. I had to eat every couple hours because I just get dizzy and just like I was going to pass out and all kinds of weird stuff going on. But once I started keto, the first 3 days were miserable. But I trusted Brian, and I saw blurry for day two, I think. And day three, I started feeling better. And the day four, I was like, woohoo! But when I started eating the high fats and proteins, and that's, of course, you guys kind of get what that is. That's eating steak and burgers and eggs and chicken's more protein, but that's good too. And eating more foods like that and cheese and all that, kind of similar to Atkins. If you want to know the differences between Atkins and keto, Brian can talk to you about it. I could talk to you about it later on, but we won't get into that right now. But when I started doing this, my hormone levels started to get normal. Now, women, they have that one time a month, where they, since it was a men's conference, where they just go nuts, and you could actually probably commit them for a day in a mental hospital. But they're controlled because their hormones are going crazy. They're having that time, right? Well, we've got hormones too. Sorry, guys. We're men. We're 100% men. I'm 100% man. And we have them too. And they have a very powerful control physiologically on us and mentally. So that's why I'm able to walk by all the snacks and cookies out here now and not blink an eye, because I don't have a desire for them. Because I've broken every need for sweets. Does that mean I can't have sweets? One thing I found out about keto is you can adapt. Everything can be adapted to keto. I make a really good keto pizza. They have these things called keto fat bombs. It's kind of like I don't know how to describe it, like chocolate chip cookie dough, if you will, peanut buttery stuff. And there's all sorts of things can be adapted, tacos. So the food's a whole other thing. You can adapt all that. But so the hormone levels in my body started to work. The insulin levels dropped, and I don't remember what my last blood test was on insulin. I know it had dropped like more than half. Yeah. You know, and it's simple, you know, like Brian explained this, but I want to say it one more time. High insulin means you're fat, low insulin means you're skinny. Simple as that. If you've got weight on you, chances are your insulin levels are probably a little high. Chances. So when I started to get all that under control, eating the foods that I eat, my leptin's gone way up, and I produce all this leptin, and the truth is I forget to eat sometime because I'm not hungry. I don't experience the traditional hunger pangs that people experience when they haven't eaten for a while. My longest fast has been 14 days. That's the longest one I've done, which is basically, the only thing I drank was unsweetened green tea, no sweetener at all, just basically tea leaves and water. And I did a 14-day. I was only supposed to do a 7, but I was praying the Lord. I said, Lord, I feel like this fast has an ulterior motive because I'm going to benefit from it. And he knew I meant benefit physiologically, and I felt like it wasn't really for him. And he says, okay. So the Lord spoke back to me. He says, okay. He goes, you give me 7 days and give yourself 7 days. And so I'm thinking, oh, cool. And he says, oh, by the way, he says, you take the first 7. The last 7 you have to get from me. So I had to go 14 days. And so the last 7 was for him, but it was really great. My friend Dante says, your spidey senses are back. And so just because the Lord was really just, I was so close to the Lord at that time. In my fast, one of my primary motives for fast, I just want to be next to Jesus. I just want to hang out with him. I don't want anything getting in the way of that. And so that's the real reason I do those fasts. Not for any benefit, but that is a benefit, right? For just hanging out with Jesus, you know. So I just want to be close and have intimacy with the Lord. So yeah, you can do fast. And you can, those of you who are going, I could never do without sugar. Yeah, you can. You really can. You don't need sugar. Once you get after the first couple of weeks, when you get everything all just kind of normaled out, you won't have those extreme cravings. Snacks, you know, there's habits you have to break, but they're just habits. Like sitting, you know, you go to a movie theater, you grab a bucket of popcorn. You got to figure out how to not do that. And once you get there and you break all those snacking habits, not hunger or some kind of weird craving thing, but just the habit of snacking, watching TV or whatever. So. With keto, once the insulin levels and all that get all done, you know, that all just changes. It changes in here. So I love cheesecake still. I love ice cream still. But the truth is I could do without it. Now, I've broken keto on purpose 4 times this year. 4 times. Because you're not in a prison. But here's the cool thing. Every other diet that you break, it's hard to get back on, isn't it? I broke keto for 1 day, Thanksgiving, went right back on the next day, didn't even look back. Did it for Christmas, 1 day, went right back on the next day, didn't look back. Did it around Valentine's Day, 1 day, went right back on it, didn't look back. So you can actually break it, go right back on it. And the cool thing is once you're off of keto, you start to feel like crud. And then when you go back on it, after a couple of days, you're like, oh, man, why did I stop doing this? I love this, you know, because you love how you feel on keto. But again, the other benefit is fasting, because that is the ultimate thing, is to spend that personal, close time with the Lord, which was something I really needed, by the way, because I spent literally that 8 months. I think I was studying keto stuff probably 7 out of 8 months. The eighth month was separated between Jesus and television, but, you know. So I've had a breakthrough, and this is a lifestyle for me. It's not a fad diet. It's none of that. It's the way I am now. It's what I do. And when I finish this up, it takes a couple years, really, if you're at my size. For some of you guys, you could probably do it in a couple months, but it takes a couple years for a guy my size. And once I get down to my goal weight, I'm not going to go off of keto. I'll probably increase my carb intake a little bit, but I'm not going to go off it because I really enjoy the way I feel when I'm on it. So it's 3 o'clock. I think we start break here. But hey, if you guys have any questions for the doc, you guys are welcome. I think you're going to stick around a bit. He's going to answer questions or anything, and I'm going to be around a little bit, and I'll answer some questions. And So if you have any questions, but thank you guys for coming over and listening.